Hello and welcome to the I Can Do podcast with Benjamin Lee. We're here to talk about tips and strategies to have an I Can Do mindset. Life is what you put into it. Get the most you can. Here's your host, Benjamin Lee.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of I Can Do. I am Benjamin Lee. Thank you so much for listening. We have a new discussion, interview, new guest on the show today. I had the pleasure of interviewing Maxim Seguin. Maxim is the founder of Fit Vegan Coaching and the Fit Vegan Blueprint Program's creator. He helps vegans get lean, toned, thrive, and become their best self on a Whole Foods plant-based lifestyle. Maxim is the real deal. He's been on an amazing journey. In this episode, we discuss what caused him to make the decision to become vegan. We discuss distinguishing between being motivated versus being committed. I really loved what he said about this idea of being committed versus being motivated. We also talk about the importance of how checkpoints will help you to attain your goals, the importance of how fast we can get back on the wagon after we may slip up or have a mess up, and winning the next meal. And we also talk about if you decide to become vegan, a very simple thing that you can do to slowly ease your way into that lifestyle. So I really appreciate Maxim being on the show. I know that you will enjoy this conversation as well. Here we go. Maxim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Thank you for allowing me to be on your podcast as well. A few weeks ago, I know we connected from Robert Cheek, and that was great being able to get to know him last year as well. So I know you're doing a lot of amazing things. You have a very busy schedule. Happy birthday. I know you just celebrated a birthday a few days ago. How are you feeling now entering into a new decade of life?
Yeah, thank you. It feels good. It's been very interesting. I feel like I've been looking forward to like that shift in the decade just because of like what I told you when you're 20 something, like regardless of how much you're trying to change the world, like credibility goes down to like, oh, cute, you're trying to change the world, you're 20 something. And so I think like now there's a bit more seriousness to it just because I can say 30. So just excited for more impact ultimately.
Yeah. Well, you've already changed the world quite a bit in your 20s. And I think sometimes people can underestimate. I think it's Tony Robbins who says this quite a bit, right? People overestimate what they can do in a year and underestimate what they can do in a decade. And you've actually have done quite a bit. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, tell us about this journey. You're in a new decade of life. It's been, what, 9 or 10 years since you became a vegan. For the audience here, walk us back. How did this get started? When did you make this decision? What were some of those challenges as you decided to go on this new journey of life and health?
Yeah, absolutely. And now reflecting back on it, it's the one decision that changed the trajectory of my life, ultimately, because my whole life is centered around it now, especially with the cancer aspect. So realizing like that's the one thing that literally shifted everything. So like over 9 years ago, I used to be a bodybuilder and a power lifter. So I'm 6'4". I was 240 pounds. I think it was deadlifting like 550 pounds at the time, squatting 410 pounds, bench pressing. It was like 310 pounds what I could do at a time. So I was a part of the thousand club in my lift. And I was just really big and strong, heavy meat eater because I grew up on a farm. So you know, we had our own chickens, we had cows, we had geese, we had bunnies, we had everything. And so growing up in that environment, it was very meat heavy. And when I was 240 pounds, I was training with one of my buddies one day who was a fitness model. And he gave me a ride to the gym. And ultimately after the gym, he was like, hey, I just need to make a quick pit stop. Do you mind coming with me? I was like, you drove me here, so I don't really have a choice. Mm-hmm. And so ended up into that friend's apartment. As he opened the door, there was a runway. in the middle of the apartment, like a high fashion runway. I was like, what kind of friend you got here? And it's like a pretty big apartment too, right? I was like, what kind of friend you got there? It's like, oh, it's my modeling agent. I'm just here to pick up my comp cards, which are like your business cards when you're modeling. It's like really big with your photos and your measurements. Okay. And so she looked at me and she was like, hey, we have an open casting coming up like in a week or so. Like I see something under those like big chubby cheeks. Oh, it's 240. Like I was puffy. Mm-hmm. And she's like, try losing some weight. See if we can do a photo shoot. I was like, you know what? I've done bodybuilding. I've done powerlifting. I've played basketball at college level. I've done martial arts. I've done a lot of different things at that point in my life. I was like, let me just try this new thing. And so I, at the same time, signed up for a fitness competition. Mm-hmm. So not bodybuilding, but fitness. You're more kind of more like board shorts versus a Speedo. Wore Speedo once. I was like, that's it. I'm going to go for board shorts moving forward. So started to train for that. And the whole goal was just to get lean, right? I didn't have to get smaller. I just had to get leaner.
Okay.
Got leaner, did my first photo shoot, and then I got like a lot of compliments, grew up very insecure. That's the main reason why I went into bodybuilding. I was like really skinny and scrawny growing up. I was shaped like a spaghetti noodle because I was really tall, and got bigger, started to get some compliments, and then I booked a job and I made some money. I was like I made money by someone taking a photo of me. My head was just like, I had a hard time wrapping myself around it. I was like working at Subway, making sandwiches for people. I was like, this is more fun. Yeah. I get to like work out and be fit and I make money.
Let me hit the pause button real quick, if I can.
Yeah.
You said you got leaner. Tell the audience, what did that look like? So you're 6'4", you're 240. What did that look
200.
Like?
200. I think I was about 40 pounds.
You lost about 40 pounds? And how long did that take you?
Probably like 6 months, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so it's were like, you like practicing then, like with the modeling as you were losing weight, or was it all right after you hit that number, you just went in and did it?
Yeah. It's when I got a certain level of leanness where I'm like, I think I look good now. Let's just book the photo shoot. Gotcha. Because bodybuilders, they get to a level of leanness that's not very appealing to a lot of people. So you actually need more body fat to look nicer on camera versus like being super really shredded. So got to that point, did the photo shoot. Then, I booked a job, made some money. And I was like, dude, I just made as much as I made in a full day. And like one of the jobs, like a full week that I made at Subway. I was like, let me just do this thing instead.
Yeah.
And so went back to the agent and I was like, well, I'd like to do more jobs. And she's like, okay, well, you're too big, right? Like I was still pretty muscular at the time. And she's like, because you're 6'4", you're technically too tall to do high fashion modeling. Mm-hmm. Most guys are like 6'2". And it doesn't sound like big of a difference, but when there's 15 guys that are 6'2 and you're 6'4, I obviously stand out from everyone. So it was a little bit too much. So when I was walking, I kind of like shrink myself with my shoulders like this. But ultimately that was the point, like, you need to get smaller. But I'm like, I'm lean right now. Like, I don't know how much more body fat I can lose. She's like, no, it's the muscle that's the issue. Mm. And so I was like, well, I have to lose muscle. I've worked so hard to build this thing, right? Yeah. So I was like, okay, you know what? Like, I've tried bodybuilding, I've competed, I've done powerlifting, I've done all these things. Let me just try this thing full out. So I went on Google. I'm like, what diet's going to allow me to get skinny, right? Not lean, not muscular, skinny. And then vegans showed up, said, vegans are skinny and weak. And I was like, great. I don't care about being weak. I just need to be skinny. And so I substituted. So for almost 3 years, I was eating the same thing every day, which was a dozen eggs.
Okay. Yeah. Tell us.
Yeah, so it was a dozen eggs for breakfast. I think it was 10 egg whites and 2 full eggs, a cup of oatmeal, half a cup of blueberries, and 2 tablespoons of peanut butter. That was my breakfast every day for 3 years. And then after that, for 5 meals a day, I would have 2 to 3 chicken breasts with a cup of rice, some broccoli, and some hot sauce. It's the typical bro bodybuilding type of diet, right? And I did that for 3 years. Mm. And so when I did the discovery of like vegans are skinny, I'm like, great, let's just get skinny. The next day, I think it was a bowl of frozen blueberries, bananas, and dates was my breakfast. And that was over 9 years ago.
Okay. So yeah, I got some questions here. Yeah. So in a matter of 24 hours, you were able just to make that mental shift. How were you able to do that? I mean, 3 years, you may have been bored eating that after 3 years. That's a long time to eat the same thing. But just let go of all of that in one day. Walk us through that process. Did you have any fear or there are limiting beliefs? Obviously there couldn't have been that much if you're able to do it that, you know, in a day.
Yeah. Well, I'll share something about me. If I want something, I'll do what's needed for me to get it, regardless of what are the consequences of it, regardless of how hard it is, regardless of who it's going to impact. So it has its positivity, but it also has its downside to having this type of personality, which I've improved as I've matured. But back then it was like, I want to do this thing. I'm going to do this thing regardless of what else it affects in my life. Wow. And so it was just like, well, I want to do this thing. The goal has shifted. And then I had to be very disciplined to be able to do bodybuilding, to get to that level of leanness and step on stage. So the discipline was already kind of built into me. So now it was just like, well, let's apply this same aspect to this area now. And so that's why I made the switch overnight. And ultimately it came with consequences, which was, I didn't know what to eat. I didn't know what was vegan food. All I knew was like fruits and vegetables. To me, the concept of like, I knew about rice, obviously, but to me, it's not like rice wasn't a vegan food. I didn't associate it as a vegan food. It was a source of carbs to supplement the chicken I was eating when I was bodybuilding. And so, you know, the whole purpose was to get skinny and lose as much muscle mass as possible. And so in my first year, I did the opposite of everything that I knew to build muscle. I stopped eating protein. I stopped strength training and I just did cardio. Managed to lose 80 pounds in my first year. Right. So I had kind of like bulked up a little bit after the photo shoot, put on some weight because I don't like staying that lean for too long. So ultimately I ended up going down to about 160 pounds. After a year, because I'm 6'4", right? So I was like really back to being really skinny.
Yeah.
But the look that was in style that year for high fashion modeling was the 12-year-old boy, drug addict kind of skinny look. That was the thing. That was the look that year. And so I needed to match that or else I wouldn't be able to get jobs. And I was like, well, you know what? Screw it. I just spent all this 1 year losing as much muscle as possible. Yeah. I said I went from like an extra large to a medium, right? A small medium shirt, which was a big hit to the ego and to the identity.
Yeah. So you're 2021 when this is happening, right?
I was probably 20, pretty early in my 20s. Yeah.
No. So you were working at Subway. Were you in college? You know, how did this affect just your day to day life and habits? What did that look like? Focus and all of that.
Yeah. So I dropped out of college. So I was playing basketball in high school, got recruited to play college ball. Played college ball, was only there because I love basketball. I already had a hard time with school. Right. And in my head at the time, I was like, there's book smart, there's street smart. I'm like, I'm really street smart. The book smart, I had a harder time sitting down and kind of focusing on things that I had no desire to do. That's why when I want something, I'll study for 20 hours in a row because I actually enjoy it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I had a hard time with school. Got into my basketball scholarship in college, played for, because it was a 3-year program. Because in Quebec, I was in Canada, and Quebec, it's different. There's like high school, you can do pre-university, kind of. That's what we call college. And then you can go to university. Mm. So it was a 3-year program. I did 2 years, then my grades suffered. And then for one semester, like, you can't play until you bump up your grades. And then I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm done playing here then. And then I went to public school because it was a private school that I got recruited for. Let me just go to public school. Mm-hmm. And I went to a public school after taking one semester off. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately stepped away from kind of school at that time. And I just went straight into working. Mm-hmm. So I was just working, living in my parents' house, working out. That's all I was doing at that time.
Yeah. So how long then did you model?
About 2 years, maybe two and a half years. Yeah.
Yeah. Where did the mindset, if I can ask, of you just being able to immediately say, okay, look, this is what I want. This is what I'm going to do to get it. I know you have coached 500 plus people, and we'll talk more about your business later. That can be hard for a lot of people, especially like going to vegan or really anything else, right? Making that decision and just severing or cutting things off and saying, I'm doing it. Was that from your parents? Was that through... was it more so, I know you mentioned bodybuilding, was it just that discipline or that muscle that had been built over time? What was it that you think got you to that point? And do you still have that mindset today?
I do, but in a more mature way. But I'll be honest with you, I don't know where it originated from, because I think my first big love was basketball.
Yeah.
And, you know, I grew up on a farm. We didn't really have like people living around us. So it was pretty much like me, my brothers, and my family. Like, we didn't have like visitors because we live on 140 acres of land in the middle of nowhere. And so it was me shooting hoops in the barn. And so after watching a few basketball videos, my parents, my dad's 6'8", so he played basketball. My mom's like 6 foot tall too, played basketball. And so I was like, well, let me just try this thing. And I kind of got hooked into like the ball going into the net. I was like, oh, like this is the thing that makes you feel good, right? The ball goes into the net, you scored. And I got addicted to want to become better at that. And ultimately, I just started practicing all the time. And I think that's kind of where it built up. I was like, I want to be good at this thing. Let me do more of it, because it just makes sense that in order to be good at it, I need to do more of it. And basketball was the first love where I really wanted something for my life, because I wanted to play in the NBA at the time, right? I was like, let me just train for this. And so it's the first thing I fully gave myself into. And I progressed really well, right? I think the first time I shot hoops was, because I was in Canada, we were wearing skates. We were skating on the ice. Mm. And there was a basketball net there. And my buddy's like, I have a basketball in my car. We were like, wow. Young kids in their parents' car. And he's like, we just started shooting hoops with ice skates in the middle of winter in Quebec. And I was like, this is fun.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what built it into me. And then once I got success in basketball, I ended up playing in high school, playing in college, got recruited NCAA Division II, part scholarship, didn't really have the money to go for it. Mm-hmm. So that's when I kind of switched to bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. But just to see that I could have some level of success by applying more hard work, I was like, this is great. Then technically I can literally have whatever I want as long as I work hard for it. And there's a long enough of a timeline for me to get the thing.
Mm.
And so that's kind of what I've been living by since then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is good. Let's talk about this a little bit. Because I know that can be challenging for a lot of people. One of the things I experienced, and people made fun of me, this is back in, I think it was 2016 or maybe 2015. It was Thanksgiving. It's my favorite holiday, especially when the food is like been sitting around in the fridge. The next day, the food is always better. Watched a documentary, I don't know if it was Forks Over Knives or another movie, but I was like, okay, I'm going vegan. Like, you know, watching that. So we had all this food though. And like the first 24 hours, I was fine. And then I already started making like compromises in my head. Like we had leftover cornbread. And I was like, well, you know, there's only a couple of eggs in that, right? And so
it's not a full steak.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So it lasted for like 36 hours. What advice do you give to clients or people who are listening, you know, who are ready to make this shift, whether, you know, to vegan in particular or to something else? But maybe there's some limiting beliefs or this idea may be missing out. That's something that you have that's pretty strong where you're able to do that. How would you coach someone going down that path who's ready to say, okay, look, this is enough. I need to go in this direction.
Yeah. So I don't think the cutthroat approach is for everyone, because I feel like there's a difference between like being motivated to change and being committed to change. Right. So to me, I've always been more of a cutthroat person, and I understand that the majority of the world doesn't function that way. And there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of people I work with do not have that cutthroat approach. And so it's more of like a gradual process. So to me, it's if I say that I'm going to do something, I'm very careful about the things that I say that I'm going to do, because I know that I will follow through on them. And so it's like, is this really a thing that I want to commit to? And so when I ask people when they have a goal, it's like, are you interested in the goal? Is it like kind of a cool goal for you to do? Or are you like genuinely committed to it, that you're like, you're ready to do what needs to happen for you to reach this goal, regardless of the timeline? The timeline is what screws everyone up, right?
Tell us more about that. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So we all have this expectation that we all want things fast, right? We live the Amazon Prime life. I'm like, I want this thing. Let me get it right away. And so same thing for fat loss. We think that because we want to have the body that we want, it should happen in 90 days or whatever the commercials are saying nowadays, right? And so if you remove the timeline and you just commit to getting to the outcome, first of all, you're guaranteed to get it, right? Because if you don't fail, you can't quit. Ultimately, you can always get the thing that you want. The timeline is what makes people fall off. They're like, well, I gave myself 90 days. It's been 90 days. I haven't reached it. Let me just revert back to my old ways, right? It's the duration of the goal setting that screws everyone up. And I get it. You need to set a goal so that you have a checkpoint, but the checkpoint is not the end of the race, right? It's a checkpoint. If you didn't reach it by that point, who cares? If you genuinely want it, set another one. Just give yourself another 90 days. The other thing, it's your health and your body that we're talking about, right? It's the vehicle that'll allow you to live for a long time and feel good while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the duration is what messes with people, because they set too short of timelines. We set goals and timelines with the expectation that everything will go perfectly. And I get it. Everyone that we work with has the best of intentions when they come in. Oh, you'll see Coach Maxim. I'm going to stick 100% to the training and nutrition plan the whole way through. And at first I'd be like, that's great. Let's get going. And I'm like, hey, I can appreciate that that's your intention, but here's the reality of it. You're going to eat the cookie where you're not supposed to eat the cookie. All these things are going to happen. So if we understand that failure and tripping and falling off the wagon is a part of the journey, then all we need to focus on is how fast do we get back on the wagon, right? It's not if we're going to fall, as we are, but how fast do we get back? Because some people will fall and they'll be like, you know what, Ben? Next year, New Year's resolution, that's the year for me, right? Or next month, when we're the 1st of July, that's when I'm starting.
Right. Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well, next Monday I'll start, right? So how about you just win the next meal, right? That's pretty fast to me. How about you get back on track the next meal versus throwing the rest of the day, the rest of the weekend, the rest of the week, the rest of the month away?
Would you recommend then more, I like that language of checkpoints versus goals? And yeah, I agree. You know, obviously we can have goals and things like that. Do you use that kind of language with clients, like with checkpoints, like, all right, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, a lot of programs are designed around 1, 2, 3 months, things like that. That would be a better approach then.
Well, to me, I don't, that was more kind of like out of sharing on top of my head, that language. Gotcha. What we do with our members is I'm upfront with them. Gotcha. I'm like, hey, we've coached over 650 plus people at this point. On average, it takes you about 4 months to lose 20 pounds, mm-hmm. which most people are going to tell you, hey, you can do this in 2 months. You can lose 10 pounds a month. Easy, right? But yet, there's not enough time for you to mess up. There's not enough time for you to learn new habits and new skills. So the majority of people we work with, man, it's like minimum 8 months, 8 months to 2 years. Gotcha. Like, we need time to build this a part of your identity, right? Mm-hmm. I like to use the analogy of full immersion. Right. So, Ben, if I grab you and I throw you in the middle of London, UK for 10 years, do you think you're going to come out with a little bit of an accent and some slang words after 10 years?
My voice definitely would change. Yeah.
Right. And so same thing here. I'm trying to immerse people into our world so they have a different language in how they speak about their health and their body. They have a different way of viewing how they approach training and nutrition. So they have, that's what I call their blueprint, a healthy blueprint in their mind of how to live sustainably. So to me, I'm just trying to immerse them and just bombard them with the right way to do this ultimately so that they have this for the rest of their life. Right.
Gotcha. Talk to us more. I like what you said about a distinction between motivation and commitment. Can you expound on that a little bit more?
For sure. And motivation is completely emotion-based, right? You can go on YouTube, type motivational video, and there's going to be millions of them. And then you watch them, you're like, oh, I'm ready to change the world. Let me go and work out. And then if you just wait about like an hour and a half and you sit on your couch, you're like, well, tomorrow morning, I'll wake up early and I'll go and do it, right? So it's purely emotion-based. Commitment comes out of, there's no emotions when it comes to commitment. Commitment is you say that you're going to do the thing and you do the thing regardless of how you feel. And to me, the first, I fundamentally knew that, but the first example of that was when I had to be a caregiver for my ex-partner.
Yeah.
Right. Because, man, I'll be honest, like there's a bunch of days where I was crying. This was hard to deal with. I was stressed. Like the person that you love is dying ultimately. And like, you have to be like, yeah, let's just show up. Let's take care of her and like be happy and jolly because you don't want to show the stress. That's, to me, that was the first real life example I got of like, that's what commitment looks like. You show up even if you don't want to. You show up even if you don't feel good, even if you didn't sleep well. Like, you have to do this regardless of how you feel. So that's the difference between motivation and commitment.
Yeah. No, I think that's so important too. There's so many different ways that we could talk about that and use that, you know, with relationships and, but just with our health.
Absolutely.
And, you know what I mean? So you mentioned cancer, you mentioned your partner. I know that's a big part of your story.
I was half of my 20s.
Half of your 20s. Wow. Yeah. How else did that impact you and change you? Obviously, I know there's a lot of pain and sorrow and things like that, but you learned this idea about commitment. What else were you able to learn through that suffering?
A lot of things. But obviously the commitment piece is huge, but the other component is, you know, my grandfather passed away from cancer as well. You know, it takes the life of people that you love away. But my grandfather, I didn't live with my grandfather. I wasn't the caregiver for my grandfather. You know, we all have a family member that like has cancer, is dealing with something. You're like, but you don't necessarily see the impacts of it. And so for me to have been 24/7 for almost 5 years, like every day waking up to screams in the middle of the night, having to drive to the treatment, having to at one point help my partner get dressed, to have like all these things, I saw what losing one's health looks like, right? And I'm grateful that I didn't have to experience it, right? I got to experience it secondhand, and I acknowledge that some people have gone through it and it's freaking terrible. Because her and my grandfather was livestock related. It was not a genetic thing, right? It was purely out of like stress, not eating properly, being entrepreneurs and all that. And so it was purely livestock created. And so I was like, that's what losing your health looks like. I'm like, this is genuinely the most important thing in the world, because I spent way more money than I ever had on cancer treatments. We spent all of our time trying to fight this thing, mm-hmm. ultimately. And so that made me realize, like, wow, it actually hit me hard, as if I was the one that got sick. It really woke me up without me having to go through it. And so ultimately, that's why I'm on the mission that I'm on now. But to me, it taught me like it's the most important thing in the world. And it's one of the biggest things that I fear is cancer, ultimately, right? And so it taught me that. It taught me commitment. It taught me the importance of time. Because when she passed away, it wasn't like all the things that people think would come up. To me, it was like, life is not short. I just think that we didn't make it count as much as we wanted to. Right. And to me, it was like all the times we spent watching Netflix instead of talking, mm-hmm. right? All the times we were on our phone distracted instead of spending time together, staying at home when we could have gone on and done something. And I got it tattooed on my hand right beside my watch. It says, it was a pretty weird angle, but make time count. Mm-hmm. Every time I look at my watch, it's just that reminder of like, cool, like, yes, you got meetings, you got all this stuff happening, but like, how do you make time count? With, you know, my fiance, which is going to get married in a few months now, how do I make time count with her?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, make time count. That's good. Yeah, my father passed away from cancer. He was 59, and I appreciate you sharing that as well, that story. So let me ask you, was it a mixture then? You went vegan to lose weight to become a model, and then it sounds like at the same time or at some point in time, these paths are crossing with your loved one who has cancer. Mm-hmm. Was that final shift to help you to become vegan? Why vegan? Was that it? Did it turn into more than just looking good as a model, but now understanding I have to make this time count?
Yeah. So when I first transitioned, yes, it was to get skinny. Within the first year, that's when I watched Forks Over Knife. And that's when I first got introduced to the connection between cancer, heart disease, all these health conditions in correlation to eating meat. And then it's around the same time that I watched that documentary that my grandfather got diagnosed with cancer.
Gotcha.
I think he was 63 when he passed away. He had a heart attack at like, I think like 40 something. Like he had a few of them. He was not the healthiest person, right? He taught me his favorite snack was a toast with melted butter and Nutella on top of it with a glass of orange juice. So, you know... So that's when I made the connection for the first time. I was like, it makes sense because that's how he's been eating and that's how he's been living, right? Yeah. And so when he passed away, I think a few years went by.
Okay.
And I stayed vegan the whole time, right? Because once he got sick, then the connection was made in my head. I was like, there's something there. And after the first year of modeling, I lost a ton of weight, but also like I was feeling good. Right. I had mental fog that I didn't know that kind of went away because I thought I was really slow when I was in school. I was like, I can't like focus on anything. Right. Like actually just, I was like, my God, I have more brain capacity than I thought I did. The other part is my nose cleared up. I didn't know this because that's how I lived my whole life, but yeah. I had tension in my upper nose and like mucus. And then I cut out dairy and within like a month or two, it went away. And I was like, I can take a full breath. But I didn't know I could take a full breath before because that was my norm. I had lived like that my whole life. Mm. And so to me, I just started having all these experiences. I was like, my gut health got better. The mucus, my nose, my breathing got better. My brain capabilities got better. I was like, man, this is like, why would I go back to eating meat? I feel so good right now.
Yeah.
And so that's what got me to stay. Grandfather locked it in. Fast forward a few years. That's when I meet my ex-partner, which was almost 7 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was a few years after my grandfather passed away. So almost 7 years ago, I was with her for 4.5 years to 5 years, and then she passed away 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's kind of what sealed the journey for me of like, man, if there's a clear, any clearer sign than this is what I'm supposed to be doing with my life.
Yeah. You mentioned this, you mentioned, why would I ever want to go back? Yeah, you're exactly right. I'm curious though, have you seen that, or what's been your experience with some of the clients, you know, who have lost 20 pounds in 4 months or 30 or 40 or however long they're staying on, you know, after a year or two? You know, I've had conversations throughout the years with people, and I can remember someone, and they would get to this point, you know, where they felt really, really good. And but then they would stop the very things that got them there. But the rationale was, well, I feel great now. And so I would keep encouraging him, and this wasn't like food related. There are some other things going on, but I would encourage him, well, you got there because of X, Y, Z. So because of that, that's why you're feeling this way. So you can't stop that. What's been your experience with that? And how might we be able to, what's the term, block or avoid that path, or, you know, change the story, so to speak, so we don't go down that path? Have you seen that a lot? And what recommendations do you have?
Yeah, for sure. And that's why I just try to be upfront with people. I think that's the best way to do it, right? Okay. It's like, hey, like, this is a lifetime thing. Like, yes, you're going to be working with me or with anyone else for an extended period of time. You're not going to pay me for the rest of your life to coach you, right? Because you don't need to. And so I'm just here, coaches are just here for a glimpse of your journey. But ultimately, you have to fundamentally accept that this will be a part of your life for the rest of your life. Because if you're 20, 30, 40 years old right now, and like, I'm exercising, I'm fit, like, it's easy, right? Like, wait till you hit like 50, 60. Because we have a bunch of members that are 50, 60, 70, 80 years old that either have strength training when they were younger, they were exercising, they were super fit, and then they kind of lost it. And so many people won't touch strength training, especially women typically won't touch strength training because they're scared to become like Arnold. And then I say, like, look at me and Ben, we've been working out for a long time. We don't look like Arnold yet, right? So it takes a lot more effort than people think. Arnold. I just got to say, I saw this funny video of a guy saying, like, women, what they think will happen to women when they touch a weight, and they just like really scared and they touch the weight and then they just jump up. It's like a buff suit. They go like, ah. So yes, ladies, you should lift weight. You won't look like Arnold, but you know, they haven't been lifting for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years of their life. And then we start them on just strength, a basic strength training plan. And like, well, like, I feel stronger. My posture is better. I have more energy. And so realizing that strength training will mean different things for you at different stages of your life. When you're 20s, 30s, and 40s, get it. You want to look good. You want to feel good, right? You want to feel comfortable in your clothes when you're at the beach and all these things. And when you get into like your 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And so the meaning changes, but the vehicle stays the same, right? And so it's about accepting that it will be a lifetime thing if you want to continue to feel good for the rest of your life. Strength training should be at the base of everyone, like literally everyone, for the rest of their life. Strength training, 3 times a week, full body, right? Just basic. That's going to make the world of a difference in how your body is going to feel into your older age. But then the thing is, the people that are 20, 30, 40 that are listening right now, they, I'm invincible. My body's going to be like that. I've been working out for 30 years. And then they get to like 60 and 70 and they're like, ah, okay, it hurts. Like, muscle mass goes away real quick. It doesn't stay on.
Well, speaking about that, you know, you lost a lot of your muscle mass. What did that look like once you became vegan, dedicated to that, with regaining muscle mass?
Yeah. So I never, like, last year was the only phase I ever did to try to pack on more muscle. Okay. Last year was the first time in 9 years that I've done that, because after I had lost the weight, I kind of stayed in that modeling shape after. And then I fell into like Ironman and triathlon, which if you're bigger, you're slower. So I never really did an active muscle building phase. And this past year was the first time I've ever done it. So I went from like 170 to about 205 pounds. Wow. So now I'm cutting back down to like 190-ish, which is kind of like where I like to hang out and where I feel good. Good level of leanness. I'm light enough on my feet to kind of run and do all of these things. Mm-hmm. It's doable. It's a lot of work to pack on that much muscle.
Yeah.
And to me, after doing this 1 year, the goal was to hit 210, 215. And I was like, you know what? I don't like being this big. I just feel uncomfortable. Like, was it
bulky or what? Heavy or what?
Yeah, it was just, you're heavier on your feet, right? And so I like swimming. I like cycling. I'm so used to being agile on my feet that 205, I wasn't super agile on my feet. I felt like a heavy baked potato, man. I was like so heavy. I had a hard time. I couldn't dunk the basketball. I dunked yesterday for the first time since the bulk, but I couldn't dunk a basketball because I was so heavy. So I just like being able to like jump and move in an agile way versus like being big and strong, because I've done it at 240. Man, my butt was so big. I was hitting everything. I turned corners and I hit water bottles, like door frames. You just don't notice how wide you are. Yeah, it wasn't my favorite thing.
Now, were you checking the like blood markers and things like that when you gained that 35 pounds? Did you notice any other negative changes? Did things pretty much stay the same?
For this last time?
Yeah, when you bulked up.
Yeah.
Or do you keep track of blood work, or is that something that you measure as well? And did you see any differences in yourself?
Yeah, as you said, blood work, I think like 3 weeks ago, everything stayed the same. So nice. I'm doing it whole food plant-based, right? There haven't been really any differences. And it was a year to put on like 30, 35 pounds.
So
spread out really slowly.
What did you do? I mean, like, what did that look like? Did you double up portions? I know, obviously, being vegan, you know, a lot of people think carbohydrates are bad. They're not safe. That's not true.
Yeah.
You can eat fruit, vegetables, potatoes. There's so many different oatmeal, so many different things out there, grains. What did that look like then? Was it doubling up calories or just lifting heavier?
Yeah. So I actually didn't lift heavier. I actually went with volume, a little bit more volume. Okay. So to me, I have like, I've been working out since I'm 12. So I have about 18 years in my body of exercising in different methodologies. I've tried heavy lifting. I'm 6'4". My joints are tiny. Like when I was powerlifting, everything was hurting. Mm. And so to me, lifting heavy is just not worth how much joint pain I have, because body's so long. When you're doing a squat with 400 pounds on your back, your lever is your lower back, and it's really far from where the bar is. And so I just go for volume. Right. I like to go a little bit higher reps, more volume. I get some good growth out of that. And ultimately, the nutrition is the thing that made the world of a difference. Right. The nutrition was, I jacked up my calories. I think the highest I was 3,500-ish, about like 150, 160 grams of protein. And continuing with that over the course of a year and continuing to change my workout to make sure there's enough stressors so my body has a reason to grow. Mm-hmm. And it was just a time game, which is waiting it out for a year, doing the thing that I'm supposed to do, and then waiting a year, and ultimately put on the muscle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. The time game, that's good. Someone who's listening, they're thinking about maybe going vegan. So going back to what I said earlier, I was vegan for like 36 hours, 15 or 16. And then I said I was vegan-ish. But last year, I went about maybe 130 to 150 days.
Yeah.
And so I know there were some maybe self-limiting beliefs. Maybe I just got tired or frustrated. One of the things that I have seen in myself has been I would eat a lot of the same things every day. And so I said, okay, I know this works. I loved Rip Esselstein's vegan chili. You know, so I'd buy that in bulk, and I'm eating that for dinner and lunch and stuff like that. Someone who wants to get started becoming vegan, if there were two or three steps, action items, thoughts, what would you want them to know?
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, take your time, right? Yeah. Because it's just like any new thing that you start, probably don't know how to do it properly the first time you start. Like you start a new job, you'll need to learn a lot of things before you can do it efficiently. Same thing with this new way of eating. If you transition in one go, you're going to be eating the same thing over and over again because, you know, it works. You don't know what else would work, right?
Yeah.
And so what I typically recommend to people is transition over the course of a month for multiple reasons. One of them, it gives you a chance to discover new recipes. It gives you a chance to discover new alternatives. Like when I first transitioned, I didn't know what to replace an egg with when I was making pancakes, right? And I was like, soaked flax seeds, soaked chia seeds, mashed bananas, right? Applesauce. I didn't know these things when I first transitioned. So a month gives you time to kind of transition. The other component, it gives your gut a chance to adjust to the increase in fiber. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not consuming a lot of fiber right now and you go whole food plant-based, like you're going to like double, triple that. And that can be a little bit stressful on the gut. Mm-hmm. And so here's a game plan I give to people. Let's just say you eat four meals a day, right? A breakfast, lunch, dinner, and a snack at one point, or a smoothie somewhere for your post-workout. So I say for week one, keep all your food the same, just make your breakfast vegan. Gotcha. Right? Trying to change it up every 2 to 3 days. You can try some overnight oats. You can try some pancakes. You can try some tofu scramble. Try different things. Just breakfast. The rest of your meals, keep it the same with animal products where you're eating it. Now on week two, keep your breakfast vegan. Now change your lunch, right? Play gotcha. Around with some lunches, do some wraps, some Buddha bowls, some stir fries, have fun with it. Mm-hmm. And then to week three, change the dinner, right? To a vegan one, but keep everything else vegan. And then week four, just substitute your snack. Ultimately, you might be able to do it in 3 weeks. The snack is pretty easy to substitute, but just you give yourself a chance to kind of try new recipes. And at this point, there's literally, you literally have access to hundreds of thousands of free recipes online. Yeah. Like there's so many of them that are available.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So my morning smoothie, and this is something I've noticed too. I don't know what you take. I'd be interested in hearing, you know, for years I used to take EAS protein powders, protein bars, full strength, Sean Phillips, that was his protein as well. Back during COVID, I started using Huel. I started using the vegan protein. I actually got that from another preacher friend. He had a heart event. And so I can't remember why I did it. Maybe to get my son and my wife, you know, taking some smoothies. It was actually pretty good. So we would, you know, I'd put that in, started putting in some peanut butter. Where I'm at now, I'm not using any protein powders. And I'm not using any, you know, just regular food. So my morning, I'm a creature of habit. It's the same thing. So it's like 16 ounces of almond milk, a cup of blueberries, handful of strawberries, some pineapples. I'll throw some kale in there. Two big tablespoons of peanut butter. Love to get your thoughts if I should be using almond butter or some other kind of butter, but I just mix all that up. So, you know, my morning is typically, and I feel great. I feel full for hours without the protein, but it's all just vegan. So I'm not 100% vegan by any stretch of the imagination, but I definitely can see that because I've been playing around with blood type eating as well. So I said, you know what, I'm going to take out the chicken. And I've eaten chicken like forever. And so, but I haven't had any chicken now. I guess I had some last week when my son gave me a little piece of his. But I've been playing around with that. So I like that idea of just like this slow implementation where you can kind of ease your way into it. When I started last year, I just went like all out. I had gotten on the scale and I was like, I cannot believe like what's happened here. And I was nervous and I was like, I got to figure this out. So, but I like that idea of like slow, steady progression over a month.
Yeah, because a lot of us will make a big jump into something, but we have to acknowledge that. That's the thing I mentioned with that came with maturity for me, because at first it was like pure full out, like we're doing this. Well, there's other areas of your life, and especially as you get older, then you know you have your family, you have kids, you have your work, your career, you have your friends, you have other things that kind of add that are on the plate. And so when I was younger, I didn't have any of those obligations. I was just living in my parents' house, which is like, let's just go full out, right? That's why it works a little bit less as an adult, because now there's bills, there's a fiance, there's more things that are added to the plate. But when we make these big commitments, sometimes it requires a lot of our time and energy, and therefore other areas start to suffer. And so when people come in like, I'm gonna go just fully vegan. Well, if you're not ready to kind of figure out how to do it properly in like one go, you're going to spend a lot of that time, and it's going to, all your other areas of your life are going to suffer, and you'll be like, well, this is not worth it. Let me just eat what I was eating before. Yep. Or the flip side, you're going to try, but you're so busy with the other things, you're not going to do it properly. You're going to undereat on your food, and you'll be like, well, I don't feel that great. Let me just revert back to what I was doing before. Right. So that's why a little bit of guidance helps. Ultimately, your smoothie sounds like a great smoothie, right? So peanut butter, I'll just say, make sure you buy it organic if you're going to buy peanut butter. Yeah. You know, there's a big thing that peanut is literally a molded soy. So I prefer almond butter when it comes to that, but peanut butter tastes delicious. I have some a little bit from time to time, knowing what it is, but you know.
That's good to know though. No, that's good to know. Yeah. So you said it's molded soy.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. So almond butter is a little bit better, right? Macadamia nuts, sunflower butter. Like there's so many other options. Again, diversity is key when it comes to nutrition, right? Because you want to optimize your gut microbiome. You can't be eating the same food over and over again. And so sometimes just about like you finish your jar of peanut butter, let's just buy an almond butter next time. You finish almond butter, let's just buy sunflower butter next time. It's not that like you have to eat literally different foods in every meals of every day, because that's very overwhelming to do that.
Yeah, that is.
buy a bunch of kale, some chard, some spinach. Once you're done, buy different types of vegetable the next time you go to the grocery store, right? Okay.
No,
but your smoothie sounds great, but it sounds really low in protein. Not, I'm not the bodybuilder type protein guy, but ultimately you want to look at protein not on a per meal basis, but on a per day basis, right?
What would you recommend to add then for the protein?
Well, two things. It depends. So I use protein powder, right? And my members as well, just because in terms of calorie cost for how much protein you get, it's one of the best ones.
Which one are you using, if I can ask?
So there's Veg Nutrition, which tastes really good. But if you don't want protein powder, the second best option, I would say hemp protein, simply because if you grab hemp seeds and you crush them and you squeeze, like cold press them, ultimately, the oil that comes out, that's hemp oil. The meal that's left over, that's hemp protein. So it's literally crushed hemp seeds. That's the closest you'll get to Whole Foods. And then the other one, a little bit, doesn't taste as great, but if you just blend a block of soft tofu in your smoothie, then you get some protein, but you get a little bit of that soft tofu texture into your shake.
So I have used hemp seed as well. I've run out of it, but so you're saying though, the hemp oil is going to be more efficient and more...
The hemp protein.
The hemp protein. Okay. So that's different than the hemp seed.
Yeah, so basically it's crushed hemp seed. So they removed the fat in a healthy way, because a lot of company will use like hexane or heat to extract the fat from like a pea protein or pumpkin protein, for example. But when you add heat, you kill some of the enzymes in the food, right? So because it's cold press, it's more whole when you're looking at hemp protein.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. So you're a coach. I've had a number of coaches on the podcast. How do you define coaching? Why do people need coaching? I'm a big advocate of having coaches. Looking back in the last 10 years, I've seen this pattern in my life, actually longer than 10 years now. Well, how do you define coaching, and what's the value of someone having a coach?
So a coach is the thing that allows you to not reinvent the wheel or having to figure out the wheel. Right? I have multiple coaches in my life. There's areas that I wanted to improve, and I'm here like renting all the books, watching all the YouTube videos. But the thing is, there's so much information. And I think a lot of people are getting overwhelmed with how much information is out there. And it's great. You can probably find everything I'm telling you all over the internet, which would be a bunch of clips of me saying it, but ultimately you can find it all over the internet. But the hard part is, how do you piece it together to bring you to your journey in a safe, efficient, and fast manner? Okay. That's the hard part. That's where a coach comes in, who has an area that they're an expert in. Like, if I want to fix my car for my motor, right? I can genuinely probably go on YouTube, figure out how to open the motor, how to change that part in it. I can reclose the motor and get the car ready to go. How confident am I going to be to drive that car? Not that much. I saw it on YouTube, right? Like, I'm not super confident that my car's not going to blow up while I'm driving it.
Yeah.
So I'd rather go to a mechanic to figure out. So a lot of times, it depends again what your situation is in, but a lot of times people are just trying to figure out how to fix their own motor, which is their own body, their own vehicle, right? It takes time, right? I've been at this for a decade. In combination with all my team, we have 30 plus years of experience. And on top of that, we coach over 650 plus people. Like, the experience you get from coaching that many humans who have a different background, different psychology, that alone beats any certification you'll ever get, right? So it's about how you just, to me, it's outsourcing, right? I'm the guy that when I go to a grocery store and I need something, I ask the lady that works here. I'm like, hey, where is this? She's like, aisle four. I'm like, thank you. And I just walk to aisle four. Yep. I don't do every freaking aisle. They're trying to figure out where it is, right? So if there's an area that you want to improve and you've already tried to figure it out on your own, which again is overwhelming because I've tried a lot of it to improve a lot of the areas in my life and I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I found someone that was good that I connected with, which is the important part, right? Like, I wouldn't go to a coach that's keto because it just doesn't connect with my values and how I want to eat. Mm-hmm. Found someone who's an expert in their field. I was like, hey, how do I get there as fast in a safe manner and efficiently as possible? They're like, here's the blueprint for it. Right, which is why I called my program Fit Vegan Blueprint. Here's the blueprint for it. Do these things. So that's one component of coaching. The other component of coaching is what most people get wrong, is a lot of coaches, what they'll be is they'll be like, hey, Benjamin, follow this plan, which is part one, which is the blueprint. And then when you slip off and you can't stick to the plan, they go like, okay, but stick to the plan. If you stick to the plan, you get the results that you want. And then you can't stick to it because life happens. Be like, no, Benjamin, like just stick to it. If you do this thing, it's simple. You'll get the thing that you want. But ultimately, that's the issue with a lot of coaching and why a lot of people struggle with coaching, because people focus so much on the plan. It's not the plan. It's the adherence to the plan that makes a difference, right? The magic doesn't happen because you hold the piece of paper in your hand. It's doing the thing that's on the piece of paper. So that's a psychological issue. That's a mindset thing, right? Self-sabotage, limiting belief. Your friend that you mentioned earlier that was at this place, that was feeling so good, and then just kind of like stopped doing the thing because he was doing so good, right? That's a form of self-sabotage. And I wanted to add to that point, a lot of people don't know how to handle feeling good.
Why is that?
A lot of people struggle with allowing themselves to have that much success and happiness in their life because they don't think that they deserve it. So once they get to a place where like, I look good naked, I look good on the beach, I feel good, I have energy. And then their brain goes like subconsciously, right? It's not a conscious, subconsciously it's like, well, I never felt this way before. Like, do I deserve to feel this good? Like everyone's looking at me. Do I deserve this attention? I don't want this attention. And you self-sabotage, revert back to your old ways. All right. And so I love, you know who Guy Hendrix is? The book, The Big Leap?
I do. I've read that book. I have it. Yeah.
Right. So upper limiting. So you get to this upper limit of how much happiness, joy, and success you're willing to allow yourself to experience. Mm-hmm. Right. Had the pleasure of interviewing him.
Did Great you? Man. Really?
Yeah. So I had him on the show like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. I got to listen.
He lives like 30 minutes from my house.
Lives 30 minutes from my house. From your house?
Yeah. He's really close. But so what I noticed in a lot of transformation is people will drop 40 pounds, 60 pounds, crazy transformations. And then if you let them be for a little bit, they'll find a way to revert back. Because they're like, I just felt too good, right? I didn't know how to handle having this much energy.
That's what everybody says they want, right? Everybody says they want this success to feel good, to have this whatever huge following or whatever the goal that they're trying to accomplish. And it sounds like Tony Robbins' analogy too with the temperature.
Exactly.
You know, turning the temperature up, turning it down. Things like that. So how does someone break through this upper limit without giving too much away from the book or listening to that podcast episode? How do you help people?
It's through conversation and awareness.
Okay.
So that's the hardest part, right? It's having awareness in the immediate moment that you're about to self-sabotage. That's the hardest part, right? You can know all of it, but sometimes you're just in your head about something and then you self-sabotage and you catch yourself after like, oh, dang, I see what I did there. And so ultimately it's just about having awareness and practicing that muscle of like, okay, I feel really good. Things are great right now. Your partner says something and you're about to snap back or say something else. And you're just like, oh, if I say that, I'm sleeping on the couch. I'm just reverting back to where I was before, right? I like to like not feeling good and dealing with the thing that I know how to deal with. And so it's just about catching yourself. And that comes down to awareness ultimately. And so the more you do it, the better you become at it. It's like a muscle. The more you squat, the stronger your legs become. Eventually you start to catch yourself and you're able to go to another level. And I shared this on our podcast that we recorded. One of my mentors said, with new levels comes new devils. And so it's not because you break through that limit, that upper limit, there's going to be another one that's going to show up there. It's going to be a new thing for you to deal with. And that's the beauty of life, right?
Yeah,
you just get to bust through one and continue going.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Life brings about a lot of different challenges. This has been great. I know we only have about 5 more minutes left. I'm curious, you're a busy man, you have your own company, you're the CEO, you're engaged, you just had a birthday, you have tons of people on your podcast, you have 2 podcasts. What are you doing to make sure that you have this time for self-awareness?
Great question. So my mornings are mine. I have 2 cell phones. So there's my personal cell phone, there's my business cell phone. The business cell phone doesn't open until I'm ready to talk to people. The personal cell phone is like my fiance, my parents, someone needs to call me because there's an emergency. That's the personal cell phone for her. So the mornings are mine. It's my time to like read, meditate, go and work out, do my thing. Evening time, stop working at about like 5, 6 p.m., depending on the week. After that, phones are off. It's quality time with my fiance. I also take 1 week off at the beginning of every quarter. So this next week, I'm not touching an electronic device for a full week. Just no social media, nothing. No screen, nothing for a full week. It's just me. My family's going to be in town. I'm going to be spending time with them because I see them like once or twice a year. We're going to go camping. I'm going to go in the woods. I just want to live like a hippie for a week. I don't want to touch electronics. Right. I just want to completely disconnect. And that's when I think my best realization come. I get to fill up my cup, because I get to fill up my cup by spending time with myself, spending time with the people that I love outside of being on screens. That's the thing I think that drains me the most, which is interesting because my whole, all my businesses are built around this, but that's why I need that time to kind of disconnect. So yeah. Mornings, evening time with family, weekends are with family, and then 1 week off every quarter.
Yeah. No, that's great. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. I know there's a lot to that. I was just listening to Cal Newport. He's written a number of books like Deep Work, Digital Minimalism. Yeah. Someone had asked him the question, how are you able to read 5 books every month? He said, well, you may not believe it, but it's because of my phone. He said, I don't have anything on my phone that is like attractive to look at or to scroll. So he has a YouTube channel, which I think is interesting, but he doesn't have the app on his phone. And he said, you'll just be surprised how much time the phone will take. And yeah, over a day, 40, 60, 70 minutes, it may not be all at once, but that's an hour to read in a book. So yeah, it adds up quite a bit. How long did it take you to get to this point of taking a week off every quarter, turning your phone off first thing in the morning? How long did that take for you to really develop?
Yeah. So the phone off has been 2 years, because I've been in business for 3+ years now. So the first year of business, I was like everyone, like just contact me whenever you want. Phone is always on. I'm always on. Second year, I was like, oh, I need boundaries. I'm getting tired. Right. So then started setting those boundaries. The week off every quarter, that's since this year. So in January, went to Cabo with my fiance. That's when I proposed to her on that boat over there. The second one this year was when I moved from Vancouver to California, ultimately. This is my third one. So this is the first year I'm doing that. Next year, I'm stepping it up. It's going to be 2 weeks off at the beginning of every quarter.
Next year, 2 weeks.
2 weeks off at the beginning of every quarter. Yeah. I just want to like go to Europe for like 2 weeks and just like hang out and do nothing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, this has been great, Maxim. I appreciate it. Where can people find you, and how can people work with you if they are desiring to get some coaching?
Yeah. Fitvegan.ca is the best platform. The podcast is on there. Our episode is on there. The YouTube channel, the Instagram, everything is there. If you want to book a call with me directly, the link is there. But the main thing that I tell people, if you're going to book a call with me, like I make sure that you're in a place where you're committed to the change and not motivated. Because genuinely, if you're not, I will tell you that this is not a great time for you to start. Like genuinely.
Well, okay.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me for people to kind of come in and work with us and do nothing. This doesn't make me feel good. It stresses me out, right? Like people not doing the work because I care so much about people succeeding stresses me out. So I don't want anyone coming in that's not ready to do the work. And so I filter through people through that initial call.
Gotcha. So at the end of that call, I'm curious now, at the end of that call, if you can sense based upon, I guess, questions, feedback, that they're more motivated but not committed, you're just saying, hey, listen, I'm not the guy for you.
Within 20 minutes of us talking.
What's the telltale sign, if I can ask?
If they're really nonchalant about their goals and kind of about what they're doing, they're disinterested, they're not like already taking some form of action towards the things that they want. You can tell in people's voice and energy as well. Mm-hmm. So just there's a lady last week, I just turned her around. I was like, I just don't think you care like that much about the thing that you want to do. Like, I just don't care. You're ready. I don't think you're ready to kind of like exercise. And she was like, you know what? Like, I'm mainly here because my husband told me to book the call. I was like, great. Like, so mm-hmm. This is not like a good time for you to do this, right? It's like your husband forever. Wants you to, but yeah. You're the one that's going to be doing the squats and the push-up and eating the food. So
yeah, that's good. Motivated versus committed. I love that. I love that. Yeah. Final thought. I appreciate you being on the show. Final thought.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me on the show. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure connecting with you, man.
Yeah.
Hopefully we get to work out in LA or somewhere one day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And final thoughts is, I always like to end with this. Whatever you think is worth it is not. Mm. Right? So in terms of your health. So I hear a lot of people about like, but I can't give up chicken. I can't give up dairy. I can't give up steak. I can't give up all the things that potentially be harming your health. I promise you that once you lose your health, all the things that you think that matter are not worth it, right? Uh-huh. Overstressing yourself because you're trying to make some more money or get the car or get the house. Once you lose your health, you would give 10 houses away and all the money in your bank account plus more to be able to get that thing back. right? And so whatever you think is worth it is not worth it. And I'll just throw a little one in there.
Okay.
Everything I share today is absolutely worthless unless you do something with it. So I advise you to pick one thing and do something with that information, or else it'll just be live in there and it'll go away and then your life won't change.
Yeah. Thank you, Maxim. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
All right. Take care.
Once again, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. If you are in the need or are looking for more motivation in your life, feel free to check out my website, benjaminlee.blog, where you can find hundreds of encouraging, motivational blog posts on a variety of subjects. You can find all of my books, which can also be found on amazon.com, and other podcast interviews with a variety of people. I hope this helps. Please leave me a rating and a review. I can do, and so can you. Take care, and God bless.